Today, I'm in conversation with Rumbi Vunzawabaya, a solicitor and advocate for policy changes for migrants. I go beyond the headlines and beyond the sensational. Remember, if you enjoy this episode, to subscribe, to like, and to share. Let's get down to some work. Greetings. Welcome to In Conversation with Trevor UK series brought to you by the Nyaradzo Group. I go beyond the headlines and beyond the sensational. If you enjoy this series, remember to subscribe, to like, and to share. Let's get down to some work. Rumbi Vunzawabaya, welcome to In Conversation with Trevor. I'm excited to have you here.
I'm excited to be here. I'm so honored to be here. And thank you so much for having me.
Wonderful. You've had an amazing life. 26 years as a lawyer, born in Zimbabwe, educated a bit there, and then you came over here. I want us to start at a place where we look at one of your books. You've written two books. You are currently writing another one whose title excites me. But let's go to the girl in the mirror and talk to us about the inspiration behind writing that book, which you published in 2016.
Wonderful. Girl in the Mirror is a story about me. And the inspiration came from my own journey of self-discovery and journey of healing. So at the age of 38, I had a spiritual encounter, I would say, in church, where I was frustrated with life. I was on the verge of going through a divorce. I just felt so unhappy, and I didn't understand what was wrong. I had a lot of anger issues. And on the outside, I looked like everything was fine. No one would even think that I had any internal turmoil that I was going through. But that experience at church is where it actually started.
Before you go to the experience at church, talk to us about the internal turmoil. Because it sounds like it was pretty heavy. You're almost getting to a divorce. What are the issues that you're battling with at that particular moment? Let's describe that turmoil.
Yeah, so I think the internal turmoil came from on the outside. I'm a professional woman, married, children, financially sound. Everything seems to be okay. But I had some issues from my childhood that I had never dealt with. And they surface without you actually knowing what's causing you to have anger, to have rage that you don't know. You like managing my emotions, for example, like even as a mom, even as a wife. So managing my emotions. And I think the people who were closest to me are the ones who would be able to see the real me. So on the outside, you appear to be someone else to other people. But when you're behind closed doors, I dealt with anger, with rage, with low self-esteem.
What were the issues in your upbringing that were causing this? What was the root of this?
So the root is what took me back to when I had the spiritual encounter, and I went back to being a seven-year-old. And the root of the problems that I dealt with, what I was experiencing, were from sexual abuse as a child, which then led me to be quite a rebellious teenager. And I think for my parents, they didn't quite understand where is this coming from, and they never knew the root cause of the problems that I had as a child. So I also exposed myself to quite dangerous situations as a young child, as a teenager growing up, early pregnancy at university. And I think it all stemmed from that childhood abuse And I also witnessed domestic violence in the home, which I felt was just normal. But when I was an adult and going through my journey, I realized that the issues that I had came from and stemmed from the abuse that I'd witnessed growing up, the abuse that I had experienced. And I even had what I would say is an inherent hatred for men. So my husband suffered. So that's what led perhaps to the thought.
Your husband
of
was on the receiving end.
He was, for all men, he took the punishment. He was on the receiving end. So I had, because we grew up in a patriarchal society where women as well, they were abused, a girl child. I think it was something that I saw women being abused. And that led to perhaps that, without actually knowing that I have a hatred for men and any authorities for men. If you put a man before me, I saw red. And I didn't understand why until I had that revelation and that moment where I was able to start to understand why I was the way that I was.
Let's go to that experience in church. Describe it to us. What happened?
So it's an interesting experience.
Yeah, let's have it.
My pastor at that time, I worked closely with him. I was a leader in church, and I often prayed for people. So we attended church called Renewal in Solihull. And I was just sitting at the back because that day I was having an off day. So I wasn't in the front praying for people or doing any of the work. But he called me and he said, I can't see Rumbi. Where is she? And then he called me and said, Rumbi, come. And I remember that day I was wearing a wraparound skirt with elephants and a top. And he kept saying, where is Rumbi? Although he was looking at me. And what he saw, he says, was a little girl, 7 years old. And then he only asked a question. He said, what happened when you were seven? And all the repressed memories came back. All the emotions, I think, came back at that time. And I just started crying. And he just prayed for me and prophesied. It's quite a church, which is a charismatic church. He prayed for me. And then that's when the journey started, because he said, what happened? Mm. And after that, I had several counseling sessions, more prayer and more help to process all the things that had happened and to understand perhaps the link between what was going on with me now and what had happened in the past.
Mm. That's deep.
Mm.
When you look at that now, with a rearview mirror kind of experience, do you feel you've arrived at healing, at wholeness, or is still a process that's going on?
It's a journey. It's like onions.
Mm.
I think you peel off layers layers. And with life, you have experiences when you're a child, experiences when I was migrating, because it's more trauma, experiences that are piled on, and you have to continually heal. And what helps me, I think, in my healing journey is I then wanted to just pass on the message to everyone. I was so excited with, oh my goodness, is this me? Because it was absolutely a transformation of my of who I was. And I remember my husband saying, ha, there's a God in heaven.
Wow.
Because he saw
a change. Is he a Christian himself?
Yes, he is. He was there, yes, and he was literally on that night, I had to be carried out of church because it was such a powerful, it was a life-changing moment for me.
Life-changing to the extent when we started, you talked about your attitude to men. Has that changed too?
Yes, it changed. Yeah. It changed. It changed my...
We are not all your enemies
now. No. And I started to understand why, because men were also broken. They also had their own history, their own issues. So I just, it gave me so much clarity to understand people and to also be able, even in my work as a solicitor, to have a better understanding of why people are the way that they
That's a very important experience that you've just shared right now. And you do work and you do give talks on this matter.
Mm.
In a sort of a wholesome way, what advice from that experience would you give to other people going through that?
I would say to everyone that you've got to understand yourself, understand where you come from. Don't negate experiences because oftentimes people will say things that happened when you were younger, ashnabasa, or some things, they just don't matter. They're things from, and I think we normalize trauma, and we are resilient, strong people, especially people from Zimbabwe. I think we are quite strong and resilient, and we end to just power through. But it's good to stop.
You can never power through trauma.
No.
No matter how strong you are.
Yeah.
It shows, like you're saying, you appear strong, you're a professional, whatever, but it will surface, isn't it?
It will surface.
Yeah.
So once you get to understand yourself, because for me, it was my own healing. I took responsibility and ownership for my healing.
Yeah.
And not to blame anyone in the past, but to take ownership for where I am and move forward.
Mm.
And that then had a ripple effect on my husband, on my children, on everyone around me. So when you're healed, people heal others, whereas hurt people hurt people.
Others.
Yeah.
Let's move on to the other issues that your beautiful books identifies. So you talk about identity. You struggled reconciling your Zimbabwean upbringing and your British upbringing. Racism and discrimination, you battled with that. We've already talked about the mental health issues and resilience and hope, which are very important. Let's zero in on the racism and discrimination issue. What has been your experience and in dealing with that? Because you're in a country where there is a lot of racism.
Mm. Wow, late 90s when I came here, it was a shock because I was used to being in a country where we are the majority, where everyone else looks like me. But coming here, I was now a minority. And I think the racism has manifested from a personal experience of trying to break into law and trying to work in law firms as a foreign trained lawyer. I experienced it at every level. Mm. I often say to people, no one opened any doors for me.
Wow.
They shut doors and I had to create my own spaces because it was an area where your name, even your name, Vunza Wabaya, someone said to me, why didn't you just change your name to Smith?
Wow.
Why should we say Vunza Wabaya? You know, and they wouldn't even say it. So it would start with my name and the discrimination would start from there. And jokes around that, which people would just become familiar with. And I think sometimes we would just smile and allow people to get away with it. But I started to see the racism more institutionally through my work as a solicitor. The whole system in terms of the immigration laws of this country are created to be exclusionary.
Mm.
So it's a system which excludes people and wants you to go back to where you've come from.
Mm.
So even letters that people receive where they're telling people that you can't stay here with your family, you must communicate with them over Skype, the actual system is racist and it's created to be a hostile environment. And it's not something that the politicians shy away from. They openly say it, that we are creating a hostile immigration system because we don't want migrants here. And so I see that in how people are treated through the law. And that's something that has spurred me on to advocate for the rights of those who cannot advocate for themselves. But racism runs through schools, through institutions, in every sector of society. And I think that one of the things I found challenging here is that the racist will smile at you whilst they're being racist. They're ever so polite.
Yeah.
So it's like a gentle breeze, but it's there and it's constant and it's relentless. And you see it during election time when it's overt because migrants are used as scapegoats. Anyone who is not
What's
British.
The long-term solution to this, Rumbi? I mean, my sense is that it's getting worse.
Mm-hmm. It's getting worse.
It's getting worse.
They're getting more brazen. And we, as a solicitor, we were attacked by the far-right attacks recently. We had to actually work from home because...
Talk to me about that experience. What happened? Describe that to us.
So there were far-right attacks. There were children who were killed by a Rwandan boy, an 18-year-old, who I believe might have had mental health problems. But in the press, they said that it was a Muslim person. So the far right extremists, they started to attack the mosque and then started doing anti-immigrant marches.
Mm-hmm. And did they target you as a fam?
They decided to target all immigration lawyers. Mm-hmm. So they had a list of immigration lawyers where they had scheduled to go and do marches against them at their, our name was not there, but there were other companies all over the UK where they had agreed to go and meet and do the demonstrations. But what happened was the counter protest was stronger.
Okay.
So there is a counter movement, you know, there is, and the counter movement was bold and strong.
It was strong.
And so there are many British people who are not racist. There are many people who are allies and who don't feel that it's right, especially with the colonial history of Britain.
Did it worry you? Did it scare you?
Oh, yes, it did. It caused me to have anxiety, which I'd never had around going to work. We have we had an attack in a Zoom meeting that we had for migrants.
Wow.
So they came into the Zoom meeting and started writing on the screen, trying to take over the meeting. But we didn't stop the meeting. We kicked them out and we carried on because we realized that if we are scared, the people who are supposed to help, what about the people that we serve?
Are you okay now?
Yes, yes. Okay. We had a lot of support from organizations that work with us, from the Law Society, from ILPA. So we had quite a lot of support around that, and we were able to process our feelings and talk about it. So that was very helpful.
Fantastic. I'm going to stop you there. We're going to take a break. When we come back, I want us to go to 2007, when you decide to form RBM okay. Solicitors. And indeed, to go to why you decided to leave Zimbabwe and come into the UK. At home, please don't go away. Join us after this break.
This country can make you forget who you are. You lose your sense of worth, your sense of identity, your capability. I lost that.
Welcome back to our conversation with Rumbi Vunzawabaya, a solicitor and an advocate for policy changes for migrants. So, Rumbi, when we broke, I did indicate that I want us to go to 2007 when you decided to launch RIMB Solicitors. Before we go there, what were the push factors or pull factors for you leaving Zimbabwe?
Yeah, so when I left Zimbabwe, it was for my husband to come here for further studies. So we didn't come here with any intention of staying here. We were going to just come for him to do a master's program in computer science because we'd both graduated from the University of Zimbabwe and we intended to just study and then come back. Mm-hmm. But 2002, after the farm invasions mm-hmm. and things started to sort of decline economically in Zimbabwe, our families and we saw people coming to the UK and we were discouraged from going back. So we ended up staying without actually planning to stay, but we ended up staying here.
Do you regret that decision? Do you ever regret that decision?
That's a loaded question.
Mm-hmm. Let's go there.
Yeah, so it's mixed feelings.
Yeah, let's unmix them.
I regret the time away from my family because I left home at 18 and then went to university, worked for a little bit and then came to the UK. So I missed out. I think my whole adult life, I missed out from being with my parents. And one of the regrets that sticks is quite poignant is when my father passed away. Because in my adult life, post 18, I probably spent 2 weeks with him. Because I was here. So it was only when I was on holiday and you'd just spend a few minutes there, here and there with him. And when he was gone, I realized that that's gone. Like that was a huge chunk of my life where we were separated. So being away from family is something that was difficult for me. I missed my nieces, my nephews, my siblings. I came here with my husband. We started our own family, and a lot of his family were here. But for me, that was one part of my life where I wasn't sure whether I would have wanted to actually come and live here. And I think I would have done really well in Zim. Mm. And so it was always perhaps a point of contention and conflict. But like now, I see the bigger picture. I'm happy that my children have been able to grow up in a first world where they have so many opportunities to take. The world is their oyster. They've got British passports. It enables them so to move. And the work that I've done in the community, it makes sense. Mm. So it was probably God's plan, not my plan, yeah, for me to be here and to be able to serve in the way that I serve the community and to be able to be here for such a time as this. Mm. And I don't regret that. So that's why it's mixed. And I think as a diasporan, we always have that conflict pull from home and then in the home that we have. So when I go home to Zimbabwe now, I miss home in England. And I can't wait to get back.
I fully understand the tension. I lived in South Africa for 18 years.
Yes.
I look forward to going home in Zim. And when I was leaving home, I would begin to miss being in Harare. It's as if your soul is in two places.
Yes.
And it never catches up with you.
Yes, yes, yeah.
Shall we go to forming your FEM, Arabian Solicitors? Mm. What inspired that journey?
So what actually inspired that journey was a dream that I had from when I was 15 years old. My brother and I, my name is Rumbidzai Bernadette Mizi. So RBM are my initials from my maiden name. And my brother, his name is Kudzai Fidelis Mizi. So we agreed that we were going to start firms. Mine was a law firm and his was an accounting firm. So we wrote it down and swapped our goal.
At 15 years old.
Yes. So we said we would hold each other accountable. Mm. So I came to UK. My life took a different turn, twists and turns. And my brother started his accounting firm, which is still up in Harare now. And he came here on holiday once and he brought the little paper. And he said, "What happened to your dreams? You've forgotten your dreams. You've forgotten who you are." And he called out who I was. And because this country can make you forget who you are, you lose your sense of worth, your sense of identity, your capability. I lost that in this space. And he called that out. And I said, "You don't understand, you know, can't just start a law firm here in England." And he sowed a seed. And then I had other people who encouraged me. And people just started speaking into my life. A friend drove once 60 miles round trip to come and encourage me to start. And so I then started to think that I could. And I worked at the Law Society at that time. So I used to investigate immigration lawyers. And I saw the quality of service. I saw how bad it was because my job was to go in and investigate and close firms that were doing immigration law. Mm. And I realized that this is something I could do, something I could learn, and I could perhaps deliver a better service to people who were extremely vulnerable and taken advantage of. So that was the inspiration behind it.
Mm. And so you started your work and you say that your firm has helped many Zimbabweans seeking advice. What kind of advice have Zimbabwean migrants been seeking from you in sort of specific kind of manner? What are the key issues that they're battling with?
So mostly immigration. And from 2007, there were many Zimbabweans, I don't know numbers, who were here illegally. And the government introduced a new regime of checking work, that people are allowed to work. So it flushed out people who had been working illegally. And so at that time, we advised people mainly on claiming asylum because of the atrocities that happened in Zimbabwe in 2008. Mm. So we a lot of Zimbabweans who were living in the UK illegally were able to seek refuge and were granted asylum. So that was one of the primary areas of work that we did. We also helped people to reunite with their families because they were separated. Zimbabweans, there was a mass exodus 2002. Then visas were introduced. So it was like a gate had been closed and the families were left in Zimbabwe. And the mothers or fathers who came here were also closed here and they had no papers, no immigration status. So they couldn't go back home, but they were working. So those are some of the people that we helped to get lawful residence and then to be able to bring their families to join them. And also dealing with divorces. So we do matrimonial, family law. A lot of marriages have broken up, some due to the separation. Because if you're separated from someone for 8 years, you know, relationships have broken down due to that and due to the tensions of migration as well. And so we
it's give... It's not a very nice space.
No.
The tensions of migration.
No. It's very, very, it's very difficult. And I think families are really far apart in terms of their understanding. The ones who are living here and have gone through the journey of being here illegally. Some have gone into prison because they were working illegally. And it's so difficult to for that child who was left in Zimbabwe to understand why mom is not coming back, why mom is not sending money back, and why I had one young man who was reunited with his parents and he asked me the question that, why did they leave me? Why didn't they pay school fees? But they were in prison. And so they couldn't even tell him that I was in prison. I think, you know, because sometimes as parents, you're not answerable to your child. So you're not going to tell them.
Sometimes you think you're protecting them.
Yeah. So he was expelled from school, had to walk many miles. So there's so many things that, so many stories untold about
what stands out to you as the most touching story where you felt victorious after doing the case?
So many. That young man that I'm talking about, he was separated from his mom. She was arrested for working illegally. She was a single parent trying just to support her family. And we helped her when she was in prison, then advocated for her, made representations. She was able to get her indefinite leave to remain at that time. And she was granted that. And she was then able to, we then made the applications for the children. They were able to come. But what I loved about that story is when the son came, we were able to help the family to integrate, to get back together, to understand each other.
To reconcile.
For mom to understand why her son was so angry at her. And for her to understand why he was acting the way that he was. And I think this all comes back to Girl in the Mirror.
Yeah.
Because when he was left, he was abused, and mom didn't know that the relatives who were looking after him were abusing him, and he had never told his mother. But he was able to tell me, and I was able to bring about that that help and support for the family to then reunite in total.
You then decided to sell the firm and move on and start Tulia Group as a founder and CEO. What was the thinking behind that transition?
So the thinking behind it started in when I had the encounter that I mentioned in church. Yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm. My pastor prophesied that I would stop striving because I think, and I would start living, and that I would create something where God would be able to use all my gifting for his glory. So when I had RBM solicitors, I was not the type of solicitor who will just sit with you and solve your legal issue and go. I loved to just work with people. I love to work with people. I love to help them with everything holistically. So when I had that spiritual encounter, I then felt the Lord say that I should leave the firm and do his work. And I didn't know what his work would look like. For me, I thought it meant going into full-time ministry as a pastor. As you know, I thought that's God's work. So I had some mentoring and counseling with my pastor. But then in the end, I had to let go because it was so strong, that push that I needed to start working, doing the work of God in the community. And that was the drive that led me to sell RBM Solicitors. And it was a very spiritual moment for me. I will tell you just a story about the, I asked God to give me a sign, to make sure that I was doing the right thing, because this company was making over almost 600,000 a year. It was a going concern, very good. It was, my whole family was reliant on it. My husband worked with me in the business. So it wasn't like a business that was struggling. We were doing very well. But the, I felt so strongly what God was telling me to do. So I then said to, I said to the Lord, okay, if this is really you, then I've got a 20 cases, which had been difficult cases that I'd been not been able to solve. And all of the people didn't have status. So I said, you can't ask me to sell when they're these people. So I'm going to leave them. And if they all get their papers, then I'll do what you say.
Bargaining with the Lord.
Yes. And I called my friends in and we prayed together and tears, and because it was very difficult for me. And one by one, those people started getting their papers. One by one. Whenever I had a little doubt, another one would get a decision through. And they all went down to zero. And I knew, because they were very complex cases. And some of those clients were actually in that prayer meeting because I built that type of relationship with them, and they witnessed that. So that was really a confirmation for me, and lots of other confirmations. So I sold the firm, and just the company that I sold to allowed me to transition, so that we would just transition some of the cases, because some of my clients were very attached, and I didn't want them to become to feel like they'd be neglected because of the way that I work.
So what is Tulia? What does Tulia do?
So Tulia is marketplace ministry. Mm-hmm. It's a combination of everything that I am. So
which is
a solicitor.
Yeah.
So we do legal work, but we do a combination of low cost legal advice, but a lot of free advice. Mm. So we use our profits. So Tulia is a community interest company. So we use our profits to plow back into the business so that we can provide free advice for victims of domestic violence, for migrants who are homeless. So we get referrals from Red Cross, from other charities, P3, all different charities, social workers. Mm. They refer migrants who cannot pay. Mm. And so we do that free work for them. Mm. And then we also do, it's holistic advice. So we're able to help the whole person, to help them with accommodation, spiritual support, counseling if they need it, therapy.
Are you still doing any business advice? Are you doing any business advice to businesses that are battling with their licenses and stuff?
Yes, I do that, as a consultant, not as... Yeah, okay. So I do that in my personal capacity. Mm.
What challenges are businesses facing which are connected to migrants and migrants working for firms? Talk to me about that.
We need a whole day.
Let's do this. Let's take a break. And when we come back, we're going to get to that place. The challenges that migrants are facing in the UK and the help that Rumbi and her firm are providing. So don't go away. See you on the other side.
Don't buy that visa. If someone is selling it to you, then you know that it's not genuine, because the genuine companies will have the resources to be able to bring in their workers without charging them.
Welcome back to our conversation with Rumbi Vunzawabaya, a solicitor and advocate for policy changes for migrants. If you enjoy this episode, remember to subscribe, to like, and to share. So, Rumbi, I want people to get a sense of who you are. Where were you born? Which primary school did you go to? High school, university? Shall we go there? Where were you born?
So I was born in Bikita. At Silveira Mission.
Right.
I'm a person from Mashingo, Wejira.
Mm-hmm. Wejira.
Wejira.
Yeah.
Yes. Masvanda, Shumba. Mrambu.
Right.
So I come from Chivi. I was born in Silveira Mission, but my family comes from Chivi in Mashingo. And I attended school in Harare at Blakiston Primary School. And then I went to Selborne Rutledge for about a term before we moved to Bulawayo. My father worked for the National Railways. So I then went to convent, Dominican convent.
In Bulawayo.
In Bulawayo, yes. In Lobengula Street.
Wow.
Right up until...
Memories for me. I can see the place.
Yes, right. So I went there right up to upper six. Mm-hmm. And then I went to the University of Zimbabwe.
So to study law.
To study law.
So why law?
From a young age, I was passionate about fighting for the rights of women. And my mother is the one who really inspired me to study law. And I also was inspired by a woman called Rudo Mungu. At that time, I think now she's got a different name because I think Mungu is her maiden name. But she was the director of Musasa Project.
Yes.
So I was just so inspired by the work that she did, and I wanted to be her. And she had studied law and then went on to work championing the rights of women. So that was the inspiration.
Is she
behind
one of your role models?
Yes.
Does she know that?
I don't even know if she knows that.
It's interesting, isn't it?
Yes.
I ask you that question because a lot of people, like right now in your position, you are role modeling for somebody who is watching you and admiring you and say, I want to be like them. And this is the beauty about this platform, where a lot of people are looking at you right now and say, I want to be like her. So you then went to university to study law.
Yes. I went to study law at UZ. And then after that, I worked at Madzivanzira and Partners in Harare before then migrating to the UK.
And then did you study when you got here?
So when I got here, I initially did care work. Mm-hmm. I did factory work. I did anything that would put food on the table. And I then...
You had how many jobs at a time?
Two or three jobs at a time.
Is this normal in the diaspora?
It's normal. Because the... Initially, you do low-wage jobs, so to be able to pay your bills, but also to be able to remit back, you have to do more than one job. Mm. Yeah. And then I had to do conversion exams. So to qualify to be a solicitor in England and Wales, I had to do another set of examinations
to do
that.
Did you do another degree or just converted?
Just converted. Okay.
And then you admitted as a solicitor for England and Wales.
Yes, in 2003.
That must be beautiful.
It is. Right. It is.
You've been married for 26 years.
Yes.
What's the formula? What's the secret?
There's no formula. I would say...
You stumble along.
Put God first. Mm-hmm. Yeah, put God first. I think a three-cord fold is seldom broken. So for us, we pray together. We are best friends. So we've been together from UZ and we are really good friends. We have a lot in common. And I think
you survived that tumultuous period in your life where you were battling with your own issues.
Yes.
The marriage survived.
Yes. So we've survived difficult times. We've come through them and we've had good people around us. We've had good role models. We've had people who've influenced us. So I think those are the secrets. Having being friends, having good role models, having the same values. So for us, it's our Christian values. Other people, it may be different values, but if you have the same values, you value family, you value, you know, for us, those the core values that we have are the same. Yeah.
Fascinating. Shall we go to those values? You you started Freedom Ministries
yes.
International. Talk to us about Freedom Ministries International.
So Freedom Ministries was birthed from an inspiration from my own journey of healing, of self-discovery, of dealing with the root causes and being vulnerable. So at Freedom Ministries, it's for women, and vulnerability breeds vulnerability. So when people are open and share some of their trauma, some of their failings, shortcomings, it opens up for other people to be the same. And then we go on a journey of healing together. So we hold retreats, we have prayer meetings, we grow together as a community of women.
So it's not a church per se?
No.
No. Okay.
No, it's a ministry. And we have pastors who come. We have women from all different denominations who attend our meetings. Mm. And we're able to serve the body of Christ. Mm. Because we, being a church or a denomination, for the vision that God gave me was limiting. Because we transcend all faiths, not faiths, but denominations, because it's Christian. So we get, and we support ministers who cannot be vulnerable to their congregations or in church, but they feel free to come and heal, and then they go back and serve. So our aim is for people to heal and go. So set free, living free, and bringing freedom in their settings.
You then started Tugi Trust Philanthropy. You are paying school fees for some young people. There's a lawyer, actually, who's going to be going to the University of Zimbabwe that you're paying for. Why are you doing this?
So Tugi Trust is something that I didn't start. It was started by my father. And I'm a member of the board, and then I also pay for school fees. So my father started that with doing a football tournament at Jenya Secondary School. And he paid school fees for other children. So we do it in his memory,
wow.
And we continue it on, and it's grown. If he was here, I know he would be so proud, and he would never imagine how big Tugi Trust has become now.
Touches my heart.
Mm.
What I love about your story, putting it all together, tell me if you agree, but I see God breaking you in a number of places so that that brokenness becomes a platform for giving back to society.
Mm.
The struggles that you've had are the struggles that have put you on a pedestal to be of help to the communities that you're engaging with. That's what I'm reading from your story. Is that,
yes,
do you want to push back?
Yes, that's true. And I think from a place of brokenness, you then, it's not you. God uses that. And he brings, I love the Bible, it took beautiful ashes in Isaiah 61. And that's what I see, that he uses your ashes for his beauty and for his glory.
Because if you had not gone through the experiences that you've gone through, you wouldn't be doing what you're doing
now. No,
that's
true.
It's part of the journey.
Yes.
The pain, at that particular moment, you do not quite realize what it was for.
Mm.
But this is what it was for.
And one of the things I always say to people is that there is nothing that is wasted.
Absolutely.
Every experience will you help someone else. Every experience will teach you, it will mold you, it will build you into a better person.
Which becomes important that you understand the experience whilst you're going through it.
Mm.
Realize it's not going to be, it's not wasted.
Wasted, yeah. When you're going through it, it's hard.
Of course.
Yes, yeah. It's hard to even imagine that beauty could come out of such dark places.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So let's go to that big space of the firms owned by migrants that fall foul of the law, and the professionals who are in this country, and then suddenly firms are sold, they close down, and so forth. Roughly, what kind of issues are you dealing with there? What kind of help are you offering? What kind of issues are people battling with?
Yeah, so I'll talk about the care sector mainly.
Care sector.
So in the UK, many Zimbabweans came here and did care work or nursing and health-related studies and then set up businesses in that industry. It's a very lucrative industry, multi-billion dollar industry, and the pie is big for everyone. So there's many providers who were migrants themselves, have settled and started their businesses. So the government opened up to be able to, for companies to bring in workers from anywhere in the world, post-Brexit. So companies owned by migrants, small family-run businesses, were able to bring in all workers from Zimbabwe, India, Nigeria, Pakistan, everywhere. But when the government introduced this scheme, there wasn't a lot of thought into it. And there were companies, they brought people without understanding the responsibilities that they had, the compliance that was required. And it led to companies having their licenses suspended and revoked, which then led to the workers being out of work. And we support the workers who come to us for immigration advice. Mm. What do I do now? Mm. Because they're here, they're new arrivals. So we've realized that we need to work with both parties. We need to work with the carers who are displaced, but we also need to work with the companies to equip them, to help them to understand their responsibilities, their duties, and what's expected of them, and how to manage the whole system in a way that will not lead them to having their licenses revoked. Because once you've got labor, the demand is there. It's a great business. Mm. But once you lose your staff, then you lose your business. So we are equipping businesses through training. We equip them through compliance visits. We go in. It's better we go in and see what you're doing wrong, and then help you to come up with a plan to rectify those problems. But even after the Home Office has come in, we also represent companies to challenge decisions that have been made to take away that license to be able to bring in migrant workers and to employ them. And we are able to challenge that. We've been able to do that successfully for many companies. Mm. So that's an area which is which we're working on tirelessly at the moment, because we're trying to ensure that companies keep their licenses so that...
Are you being successful?
Yes, we are. You are. We are successful. We are, in some cases, we cannot be successful because alongside the good companies, there's been a lot of fraud. So there's some companies who we won't even take on their cases because they've taken in people from Zimbabwe, Nigeria, but they had no work. So they were fraudulent from the beginning.
I gather there's a lot of abuse there.
Yes.
By our own people.
Our own people.
Who are essentially enslaving people coming from Zimbabwe, take away their passports when they arrive, they get abused and so forth. Are you experiencing any of that?
A lot of that.
Wow, you break my heart.
So we don't...
What advice do you give to people watching? What should they look out for? Those people that are enticed to come here as care workers, you don't have qualifications. Some people are trained for 3 weeks and they come to the UK as care workers. Some people have degrees and they come here as care workers. What advice do you give to those people?
So this route of coming here as a care worker is an excellent way to get into, to settle in the UK. So what I would say to everyone is don't buy that visa. If someone is selling it to you, then you know that it's not genuine, because the genuine companies will have the resources to be able to bring in their workers without charging them £10,000, charging them a lot of money. So if they're selling, you know there's something dodgy about it. So what I would say to people who are still trying to come is look for legitimate companies, look at their accounts on Companies House. Everything is available for you to see.
Is there a place where people can verify the legitimacy of these companies?
They can verify it on the Home Office website.
Okay.
But the Home Office has granted licenses to dodgy companies.
Oh.
So you've got to do your own due diligence in terms of checking on the CQC register, checking on the website, phoning them, making sure that you're actually talking to the company, because some people have cloned websites.
Would you be of help if people came across to you with that kind of thing?
I would help them. I would be able to see the red flags.
Okay.
And the problem that we have is we will highlight the red flags, but perhaps the push factors are many that people just want to leave. Some people will say, I don't care. I just want to leave the country that I'm in. Nigeria, Zimbabwe, wherever, they say, I don't care. I'll pay anything and I'll come. And that's one of the problems that we've seen.
Because things are tough at home.
Things are tough at home. People just want to leave. And they will say, in Shona, they'll say, Tozo Ronera Mberi. So Yeah, so it's a very challenging
sometimes
situation.
Sometimes it ends in tragedy.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm aware of suicides,
mm-hmm.
Where people come here thinking it's going to be a bed of roses, and it isn't that
it
way.
Isn't.
And they take their lives. Yes.
We have cases of suicides, strokes, people are in hospital, mental hospital. So it's very sad. And it's difficult to control because where there are people who are willing to pay anything, you can discourage them, you can show them, but it's up to them at the end of the day.
Mm.
Yeah.
Rumbi, what has surprised you about your life?
I'm lost for words.
Yeah. What has surprised you about
what
your
life? What has surprised
life?
Me? Yeah. Mm. Just the grace of God. You know, I honestly see favor. I experience the favor of God upon my life. I see such blessing. Everything I touch, you know, I am blessed in a way that what I say, I can think up an idea, honestly, and implement it. And I see it come to fruition. And I've just seen God's grace upon my life. And I'm surprised about the impact that I've made. Because when I go to places like where there are many people, especially from Zimbabwe, I will have so many people stopping me. Do you remember me? And I don't even remember them. And they say, you did this. Do you remember our family? So it's a real honor. And I feel humbled that I can be a vessel that has brought so much change to people's lives.
Wow. I feel it.
Mm.
I feel it. People that watch this show, Rumbi, love books.
Okay.
We've actually created a book club, the Trevor Book Club. We've got a big WhatsApp group for people that love books, and we've created, I think it's almost 600 members right now and still expanding.
Wow.
So, you've written Girl in the Mirror. We've already talked about it. It's a beautiful book. You've agreed that you're going to sell me two copies, one for my daughter, one for my two daughters, one for my wife.
Excellent.
And you've written Planted.
Yes.
Talk to us about Planted as briefly as possible. What is it about?
So Planted is a manual following from Girl in the Mirror. So I discovered that people, we open up wounds and we didn't have enough resources for them to journey through using Christian principles.
Mm-hmm.
So Planted is like a follow-up where they're rooted in Christ and it's scriptural. It's got questions and discussions for them to be able to journey through their discipleship and healing journey.
Mm. Mm. I like the title of the book that you're writing right now, Kicking Off the Heels in the Kitchen.
Mm.
Talk to us about that one.
It's about being a businesswoman and a wife and navigating that journey in the diaspora. And it's a journey that many women have found themselves in. So in the early years of our marriage, I ran a business and had and we have three children. They were little children.
Your children are Tino?
Tino,
uh-huh.
Tanaka,
uh-huh.
And Tasha.
Mm-hmm.
So we had the three little ones, and we were running a business. But I, being the solicitor, I was the business owner and responsible for the business. So my husband worked for me. So we had relationship dynamics there, which were quite interesting to try and navigate.
Mm.
And one of my coping mechanisms was that when we'd come from work, I would kick off the heels
mm-hmm.
and I'd put on my apron and go into the kitchen and immediately start cooking, because that just changed the dynamic and made me go into the role of mother, wife, rather than businesswoman.
Mm.
So it's a book about what I've learned about how to navigate that dynamic, the power dynamic, the financial dynamic.
Mm. When is it coming out?
It's coming out soon.
Right. I'm going to ask you to recommend at least two books that you've read that have made a huge impact on you that you want to share with our viewers.
The one that I'm reading now is The Diary of a CEO by Stephen Bartlett.
Mm-hmm.
So I found that really good. And teaching about self-mastery, I love that aspect of it. And
it's the most important thing in life.
Yes.
If you can't master yourself, you'll not be able to master anything else. Spending time with yourself so that you know yourself and you understand yourself before you try and understand other people, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah.
The second book?
And the second one is, it's a really thick book that I'm reading. It's called City of Dreams. Mm-hmm. And I got it when I was on holiday in New York recently, when I traveled with our daughter and son, and it's up, and my husband. And it's about diaspora journeys.
Mm.
So it's 400 years of migrants coming into New York. And their journeys are so similar to ours. So there's nothing new under the sun. Mm. All the challenges that the diaspora have experienced coming from Zimbabwe to the UK, same as hundreds and hundreds and thousands of people who've come into America, and what they've experienced, how they've learned to settle, what they've done. So it's amazing. It's unknown people, it's famous people, but it's an interesting book which I'm reading.
Sounds like. I'm going to get a copy. Yeah. Last question, Rumbi. What is one thing that would make you want to rush back home and settle back in Zim?
The sun. I miss the vitamin D.
And like today, the weather is horrible, eh?
The weather. When did I go home?
Sorry we couldn't bring you the sun from Harare. Sorry we couldn't. Rumbi, you've been amazing.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for being vulnerable, for being so open, and for being candid with us. I have no doubt that a lot of people have learned quite a lot from you. So thank you so much.
Thank
we wish you,
so much
you all the
me.
Best with what you're doing, and may the mighty Lord continue to bless you.
Thank you so much.
Allow me to turn over to our viewers who are all over the world. Thank you so much for your support. You've supported us whilst we are here in the UK for the In Conversation with Trevor UK series. Remember, we are out on Mondays, 7 a.m. Central African time. So to ensure you never miss out on any of these quality conversations like the one I've had with Rumbi right now, please remember to subscribe, to like, and to share. Also, go to our website, convowithtrevor.com, where all our content sits, including our podcast for your listening pleasure. We love your comments below the video in terms of what responding to what Rumbi has said. Thank you so much. Keep them coming. Until next time, cheers to you all.